We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
But we've got most of the tickets punched. Still a few more hanging around out there. Selection Sunday, though, less than 72 hours away. Welcome back to another Gower Hour presented by the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. Rob Joyce, Megan Gower, herhoopstats.com. She is our resident bracketologist, and she's been hard at work. But Megan, is your bracket essentially finalized with all of the high major conferences done and through? And it looks like the multi-bid leagues, no more bubbles to be popped.
Yeah, I think the one big question right now is the Ivy League. I think that's the one that could shake things up a little bit. Other than that, I would say things are pretty much finalized, but I think there's still a little bit of potential of a too big Ivy League, especially if someone else other than Princeton is to win that championship, which starts today.
Semis, just a semis and a title game, right?
Yep, exactly.
We'll dig deeper into Megan's brain hole, get her thoughts on some of the bubbliest of bubble teams. She'll tell you who she believes will be the final four teams to avoid having to play in that first four, who will have to play in that first four, and then who will just miss the cut on the field as the bubble shrank during the week with Gonzaga losing to a Portland team in the WCC final that it beat by 50 a couple of weeks ago. Good job by the Pilots. Second year in a row, Portland has stolen an NCAA tournament bid. We'll also have a guest. Peyton Titus covers South Carolina for the state newspaper in Columbia. She'll jump on to talk about the Gamecocks heading into the tournament undefeated for the second straight year after a wild weekend in Greenville. One programming note, if you're here looking for the men's show, well, we have a double dip for you. Obviously, this is our normal Friday morning time slot. Hi, welcome. Thanks for listening. Hearts of the Norlander, they recorded a show, I believe, at 2 in the morning this morning. So, that men's show that usually comes out on Thursdays, it's now in your feed this morning. So if you're looking for the men's hoops, it's probably in your feed right now. So with that out of the way, Megan, where do you want to start? We'll talk to Peyton about Greenville. Which of these other conference tournaments do you want to start with over the weekend? Pac-12, Big Ten? We always start with the ACC. Let's not start with
it. Yeah. Let's start with the Big Ten. The Big Ten was a good one.
Iowa beats Nebraska in overtime. I have to take the blame here. This is my fault. As you know, I'm the resident Husker hater. I'm letting them use my distrust to fuel them to victories. And when they were up double digits at halftime, I got cocky. If you recall, you know, the cost of me blindly saying they're going to lose every game. I wanted a ring when they won the Big Ten or the national championship. And I got ahead of myself. I started to think about that ring. And I thought they would finish it off. They came tantalizingly close. Nothing to do with Jazz Shelley, you know, playing like an all-conference type player. There's talks of her getting drafted now. No, the fuel for my hatred, I let the gas tank get empty at halftime and feel like they knew that. And, you know, this won't happen again. I'm sorry. Whoever Nebraska gets in the first round, you're going to lose. I'm back on the train. Seriousness, no, that was a spectacular run. And Jazz Shelley was really, really good. And Iowa in that second half.
Yep. Yeah. It is what it is. But yeah, I mean, Caitlin Clark didn't have the best first half, was able to get things going in the second half. And that's how the story goes when Caitlin Clark gets going.
Do you have takeaways from the Iowa side? Because, you know, Clark wasn't phenomenal last weekend, and they were still able to win the first couple of games relatively easily. Again, they didn't have to play, you know, Ohio State, for example. We'll talk about them in a minute. Mm-hmm. But they had to play, you know, Penn State may or may not be in. We'll talk about that later. Nebraska certainly in the field, and they're going to be 7, 8, 9 seed that no one's going to want to see in the first round or the second round. But she wasn't spectacular, and Iowa was still able to not only win the Big Ten, but do so a couple of games comfortably and then one game come from behind.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good that they were able to finish it out. I feel like I don't have a lot of strong takeaways because, like you said, they didn't play Ohio State. They didn't play Indiana, so they didn't really play any of those kind of top-tier teams that are in the Big Ten to get there. So if you're talking about a team that people are considering to be a national title contender, like, yeah, Caitlin should be able to have, like, not the best night. You should still get past the 8-9 if you think you're going to be able to make it to a title game.
Now, Nebraska wasn't able to do, you know, Washington State pulled the upset in the Pac-12 last year. Kentucky won the SEC a couple of years ago. We didn't have that kind of championship run by, you know, not one of the top two or three teams in a conference. But what does this do for Nebraska now, who's kind of lived on that 8-9 line for the majority of the year? Did they get bumped up at all? Obviously, you know, you took Iowa to overtime, a team that you also beat earlier in this year. To get there, you didn't have to beat Ohio State or Indiana. So what does this run do in that they nearly won the Big Ten, but they also didn't pick up a win against, you know, a marquee top 25 team?
Right. I still have them on the 8 line. So I think they might have been on the 9 before the tournament. So they moved up a little bit. But, yeah, still in the 8-9 range. And I think that's the key there, right? Like, they didn't get that marquee win. And I think if you wanted to move to a 7, they probably needed to pick up a bigger win. It didn't have to be Iowa, but like an Indiana, something like that in this tournament. And that didn't happen.
And now Iowa has pretty much, they're a 1 seed, correct? Like, yeah. A 1 seed for all the drama of who is going to be the 1 seed besides South Carolina. That's pretty much wrapped up after this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. I think that after the Big Ten and the Pac-12 finals, that was decided.
Ohio State.
Whoa. Yikes.
Lost by 23 to Maryland. As stunning a performance as I saw by anyone all week.
Yeah.
What does it do now for the Buckeyes, who, you know, were pretty firmly entrenched as the number two team in the country there for a while? Lost, again, lost to Iowa regular season finale. That's fine. But a 23-point loss to a Maryland team that is playing better. And is now, you know, they got a little sketchy there for a little bit, but now they're probably sitting there in that, you know, 8-9-10 yeah. line somewhere. What were your takeaways from an Ohio State team that they no-showed?
Yeah, that wasn't great. Obviously, a team that the two of us, I think, have said could be a Final Four team. I probably rethink that a little bit when you no-show in your conference tournament. Like, this is the postseason. I think you were expected to not be no-showing at this time of year. It's one thing when you're no-showing in the middle of February. It's another thing to be no-showing in March. A rough loss. And I don't know, it felt like they looked like the Ohio State team that we saw in November and December more than the Ohio State team that we saw as of late. And that pretty easily dropped them off the number one seed line.
So Ohio State loses the Big Ten. We mentioned the other two one seeds that wrapped up, with Iowa wrapping up one of them. So let's go to the Pac-12. I've come to the conclusion that I'm just wrong on USC. I thought, you know, I never thought they were quite a top five team, arguably maybe even a top 10 team. I thought they had a freshman superstar who sometimes has off nights and a pretty good, if not elite, cast behind her. I thought they'd kind of fall off, not quite as precipitously as Colorado has, but like that kind of, they'll lose a couple of games and host, but be in that top 16 range. I was wrong. Most impressively, I mean, they beat UCLA and Stanford, and Juju Watkins wasn't, you know, she didn't have a 50-point game like she did against Stanford earlier in the year, and I think that's most impressive.
Yeah, I think especially in that title game, like, Juju had an off night, I would say, against Stanford, like, really wasn't the main story, but the supporting cast stepped up so much to be able to give them that win. And I thought that, I think, was what I was most impressed with from USC this weekend.
So they're a one seed. Stanford lost in the championship game. I still, Stanford, I think, deserves to be a one seed. I don't know. Do you trust Stanford?
No. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if something like last year happens where they get bounced in the 8-9, like, one matchup. But I think they, going into the Pac-12 tournament, barring, like, a loss to, like, a team like Cal, had that one seed wrapped up already.
It's like every time I look at a Stanford box score, it's like Cameron Brink had 25 points and 19 rebounds and 7 blocks. And Irfan had, you know, 18 and 13, and they won 61-55. It's like something's missing there. And I don't know what, but something's missing where I don't know. You answered a lot faster than I thought you would when I said, do you trust Stanford? Like, you were. I have to think about it.
I think their guards is so inconsistent. And, like, if Hannah Jump is going off for – she doesn't even have to score a lot, right? But, like, she's got, like, you know, 3 threes and a couple other points. Like,
right, like 11 points on 3 of 8 shooting from 3, something like that.
Yeah, they're a much better team, but they don't get that – they haven't gotten that from her consistently this season. And if they don't get it consistently in March, I think they're vulnerable.
No surprise, Cameron Brink made it official. She's off to the WNBA. Now, she kind of, I don't know if she hinted at it, but she had some Instagram posts earlier in the month that kind of was leaning that way. I wasn't surprised. I assume you weren't.
Yeah, no, I wasn't surprised either. I kind of figured, like, she's already won a championship. It feels like she's kind of done what she can do at the college level.
Right. Kind of like, I mean, Caitlin Clark doesn't have the championship, but it's like, what else are you going to do that you haven't done yet? Ready for the next challenge? And she's not going to lose money.
Yes, I've had to have that conversation too many times in the last couple of weeks, I feel like. And it's like, the sponsorship deals do not disappear when you leave for the WNBA.
Nike's not going to stop posting Caitlin Clark things because Caitlin Clark doesn't play for the Hawkeyes anymore. Rest in peace, Pac-12. Last moment.
Sad. Very sad.
You're an East Coaster. Yeah, went out with a bang. You're an East Coaster. However, I know the Pac-12 held a special place in your heart, and I don't know what you're going to do next Friday or next year, like next January, whatever, the first Friday in January. It's going to be like 11:30 at night, and you're going to be sitting there either, one, watching Stanford play SMU on 11:30 on the ACC network, or you're just going to be sitting there with, like, your TV off silently, sad.
Yeah.
Oh, what TV did we buy last week?
Oh, we did. We got another TV. So there's now 2 TVs here, which is
how big?
It's just 43. So a small one.
43.
There's already a 70 inch. So that's fair. We don't need 2.
Is this on the wall? Is this just like hanging on like a table?
On a table.
You going to return it? Well, I guess, are you going to return it after March?
No.
No.
We'll keep it.
Pac-12, SEC, USC wins the Pac-12. Other takeaways, UCLA. UCLA.
I'm concerned about their
comments were interesting.
Yeah, I'm concerned about their late game management because, like, they had, so that game went into double overtime. Also, of course, last Pac-12 game that's at some ungodly hour had to end at like 1:30 in the morning, but. A game went into double overtime at the end of regulation and at the end of the first overtime. The game is tied. UCLA has the ball with like 2 seconds on the clock, and neither time did they even get a shot off? And that, to me, was concerning. You've got to get a shot off, and you can't not get a shot off twice. I know 2 seconds is not a lot of time, but you got to at least get a shot off, even if it's a bad shot.
Yeah, I agree. And then Oregon State, kind of close. Like, they jumped up to that big lead against Stanford early on, and then got away from them in the second half. I'm not as high on Oregon State as I was if we were having this conversation a month ago. I feel awfully low on them, and I probably shouldn't. Where are they now, seed wise? Have they, you know, are they a 3? Are they a 4? They'll certainly host, I'd imagine.
Yeah, they'll certainly host. I think they stay on the 3 line just as more of a result of what everyone else has done. There's really no need to drop them to a 4. They still strongly have a 3 resume. They're kind of towards the bottom of that 3 line, but I still think probably firmly as a number 3 seed. I agree. I feel like I'm not as high on them as I was a few weeks ago, but at the same time, I think all of these Pac-12 teams are like probably the most prepared for March in the way that they've had to play conference play the last few months and the level that the conference play has been at.
And for all of the reasons to dislike the Pac-12, like putting a top 10 matchup at 10:30 Eastern time on Pac-12 Network, they go Friday, Sunday.
Right.
So whether you're playing Friday, Sunday or Saturday, Monday, like they're prepared to play two high level games over the course of 3 days, which, you know, it's probably not a huge thing, especially in the early windows. Like South Carolina will be without Camila Cardozo. They could play with five players and beat whatever 16 seed that will be the sacrificial lamb. And they'll probably be fine 2 days after that. Mm-hmm. Just the point, though, that to get deeper in the tournament, like the Pac-12 will be used to this two games in 3 days. Quickly, because Peyton's going to come on here in a few minutes. Big East, UConn wins. Aaliyah Edwards breaks her nose in the quarters, doesn't play the final two games. And boy, Paige Beckers.
Oh my.
Good at basketball.
Yeah.
You were there in person.
Understatement.
Yeah, you were there in person. Tell me your thoughts on a Big East that, you know, UConn was expected to romp, and they did, but looked impressive. You know, again, they played Providence. I don't think Marquette's any good, but I know they'll probably make the tournament. And then impressive against Georgetown. Just takeaways on the Huskies.
Yeah, I mean, I know they were like overwhelming favorites and very much expected to win it in the way that they did. But I do think playing with six players available, technically seven. They had seven.
Barry wasn't available, right?
So available. So yeah, technically seven players. But yeah, playing with largely a six player rotation and still winning it in that fashion, nothing was close. Nothing was ever in question at halftime. Like I thought that was impressive. And then the way Paige Beckers is playing right now, I don't know. I feel like even though they obviously didn't really play with anyone, it just changed my opinion a little bit of the Huskies, and that if Paige is playing like that, they're a much harder team to beat.
I don't think it changed anything about how I feel about UConn. Again, all due respect, it was Providence, Marquette, and Georgetown. Yeah. My problem with UConn's never been them playing lesser competition. They've just clearly been a step behind the elite teams all year. If anything, I feel a little worse about them with the potential that Edwards, like she looked, no, it was like half an hour after it happened. She looked bad when she came back out.
She looked much better on Sunday, okay. Monday. I would say like it didn't look bad. I think she'll probably have surgery. She's
used to wearing the mask.
Yeah, exactly.
And all last year with it. So that's a positive. But I just don't, you know, end of the day, I'm not concerned about UConn beating a 14 seed or even arguably like a 6 seed, like a, you know, they played a North Carolina and Louisville are kind of those like 6 seed esque teams. I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about playing UCLA. And
yeah, the fact that that's going to be a Sweet 16 matchup likely is crazy.
Right. Or, you know, a UCLA caliber team. And then if they were to find a way to do that, can they do it again against South Carolina or Iowa? And it's just that's always been my concern about the Huskies, because asking Paige Beckers to do that against higher quality competition, she could do it. She's good enough to. It's just, I don't know if I trust it. Okay. Trust it that much. We'll hit pause on the conversation because our guest has entered the chat. Peyton Titus covers the undefeated number one team in the country, South Carolina, for the state newspaper. We will talk to Peyton, get her reactions on a crazy weekend in Greenville next.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Joining us from South Carolina, South Carolina beat reporter for the state newspaper in Columbia, Peyton Titus. Follow her on Twitter at PETitus25. And Peyton, thank you for coming on. How are you?
Good. How are y'all?
We're good. I was in Greenville last week. Megan was not. She's up in Connecticut. She was covering the Big East tournament. But, you know, run-of-the-mill weekend at the SEC tournament. Camila Cardozo banks in a three to beat Tennessee in the semis after they blow that big first-half lead. There's the fight that kind of marred Sunday's championship win over LSU. We'll kind of go chronologically. your reaction when, you know, you watch, you've seen this Gamecock team all year. They're up 23. It looks like they're going to run Tennessee out of the building. They blow it. And then, as we all expected, Camila Cardoso banks in a three.
Yeah, that was absolutely insane. My jaw might still be on the floor of the well in Greenville. But, I think I was talking with a Tennessee beat reporter, and we were both like, I thought it was over, or I thought maybe it'll go to overtime, we'd have bonus basketball. And then she just banked that thing in. And, you know, that little square is on the backboard for a reason, and she used it. And, yeah, it was wild. It was wild. I think I had to, like, submit my game story at the buzzer. And I think there were probably a good, like, 10 seconds after that happened where I was like, I am not moving any of my muscles. I can't really do anything other than just, like, watch this, because that was insane. And I did not expect that, because we've heard Dawn Staley telling us and telling Camila for the entire season, like, you have a mid-range shot, shoot the ball. And she doesn't. And then she shoots that, and that goes in and works out. And we have a game for the ages.
Yeah, crazy. And then moving on to Sunday, the fight that will leave Cardoso suspended now for the first round game. What was your reaction to that scene in Greenville?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever covered a bench clearing altercation. And I don't think that Coach Staley has ever had a game like that either that she's experienced. So that was pretty wild. Watching the game, though, from courtside, you could tell that this was just a physical basketball game on both sides. People were kind of pushing with each other, and it was fun to watch, but it was also kind of nerve-wracking because it was like, okay, well, are we going to get to a point where something like that happens? And I didn't expect it, but, you know, it did happen, and I was like, oh, snap. And then when more people came in on the court, I was like, oh, gosh, I hope this does not get bad. And luckily it was a really quick, short thing, and they were able to separate people. And the 20-minute review to figure out who all would be able to come back and who wouldn't. I know that players have apologized publicly and privately to each other and to, I guess, basketball fans in general for what happened. But I think it really spoke to the fact that women's basketball needs better officiating. And I know that the coaches can't necessarily say that because they put themselves in a precarious position. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear. This is not the first game that we've watched as basketball fans in general, where we've been kind of confused as like how the game is being called and how that makes an impact on the game, whether it be setting up a potential play or, you know, making way for some kind of conflict like that to occur. So hopefully once we get into the NCAA tournament, things will be fixed, but we'll see.
I mean, if you want to turn this into a officiating conversation, more than happy to go there. I mean, you just have to go back to the championship game last year. Going a little deeper, we'll still set that aside. No Cardoso in the first round game. No offense to the 16 seed, they'll play. Probably won't matter. Ashton Watkins will probably get the start. Since that first LSU game, she's really come on strong. How is her emergence, you know, how vital has that been, especially, you know, in February? Cardoso missed a handful of games with Brazil and then the come down from that. So how vital has that, you know, uptick in production from Watkins been?
Yeah, I think that's been huge because, you know, she is someone that you watch her play before this and you're like, wow, she's a really good defender. She's really strong and she can make an impact on a play. But now she's making a conscious effort more so now to score, like to look to score. Cause I think she had gotten it in her head at one point where she was like, you know, I'm a defensive specialist. And so I'm not necessarily going to look to shoot the ball. When I'm in a position to score, I'm more likely to turn around and set one of my teammates up. And so now we're seeing her, you know, kind of step into herself, step into her confidence and look to more stuff like that. We can also see and hear her during games kind of, I think Dawn called it like quarterbacking the defense or something. So like she's on the court and she is pointing to where she needs her teammates to go and like giving them a heads up on switches and things like that. And so I think that's huge for them to have somebody who, you know, can step up like that and step up like that in an unselfish way. So, you know, she had that kind of like, I guess, time in the sun where she was starting. And then, you know, she went right back to the bench when Camilla came back and has not, you know, like made up any fuss about that. I know she wanted that Sixth Woman of the Year award from the SEC. And I was a little bit surprised to see that she didn't get it, but also understand that Leilani Kerr, you know, had an impressive season as well. So like deserving, but it's one of those things where it's like you're spoiled by a lot of really good players you have to choose from when picking these awards. So yeah, but I think it's been massive for the team just to be able to have, you know, they talk about like next person up, next woman up mentality, but to have a like an example like that, I think is really big for their confidence and their depth moving forward on this kind of run that, you know, you lose one time and you go home. So
yeah, speaking of their depth, another piece, Raven Johnson, probably never going to be, you know, a big time scorer, but she rebounds the ball well, she distributes, and she now has that confidence and ability to make the shots when she needs to. Of all the pieces, is she maybe one of the most underappreciated on this team?
Yeah, I think so for sure. Just because it's hard looking at these award watch lists and such. I know Dawn Staley has talked since, like early on in the season that she should be on some of these award lists with her teammates like Tina Papau and Camille Cardozo making all of these splashes. But, you know, Raven is so impactful. And she, Coach Staley has talked about this backcourt is like the most talented or skilled that she's ever worked with. And I think coming from a former point guard like her, that's a huge thing to say, and we see it. You know, I don't think that when you're watching on TV, you necessarily can see how quick she is and how impactful her speed can be on a game, because this team wins track meets, and I don't know that this team won track meets like it does this year before now, and that just kind of speaks to like how different this team is than South Carolina teams of late. But yeah, she's a huge piece. I mean, she's out rebounding the post players as a like 5'9" on a good day guard, and she's got, she had a game earlier this year where she had like double digit assists, I think, if I'm remembering that
17 correctly. Against Clemson, she had 15 rebounds against Tennessee too.
Yeah, so like that's wild. And I know that she's not going to have those games every game, but she also, you know, like her and Fulwiley, their steals are huge too. They're two quick guards that when they're on, like they're incredibly exciting to watch.
Yeah, you kind of stole the next question. I mean, watching Mileja Fulwiley on TV is one thing. To see her in person, like, wow. She's so much faster than everyone on the court. Obviously, you know, she had the highlight reel play in her first game over in France against Notre Dame, but was she expected to look like this per se? I know she comes off the bench, but she's, you know, second leading scorer, and she just comes in and she changes games.
Yeah, I think she's just kind of another player who we've seen grow really well over the course of the season. She had that game in Paris, and I think she, you know, enjoyed that and got comfortable in that. And then, you know, we went to UNC and Duke in like the span of 3 or 4 days or whatever in November and December. And she played 3 minutes at UNC. And before that, she was averaging, I want to say like 23 and a half minutes a game, something like that. So that was surprising to see her not play really at all in at that point, like one of the closest games of the season. And Coach Staley, after the game, came on and basically was like, yeah, she lost her man a few times on defense, and so I pulled her out, and she didn't get back in, and she just needs to be better at that. And since then, you know, we've kind of seen her definitely grow in that way, and so she gets to play more, and she's somewhere where she's not going to be able to, you know, play all game and everything. Cause this is a team, like we talked about before, with so much depth. And so I think the focus really for her is development. And I remember talking with Dawn earlier in the season about Malaysia, and she talked about those magic moments that she has, those highlight reel worthy moments. But then it's the moments in between, she called them the meat and potatoes, that are basketball. And that's what Malaysia needs to work on. And so she'll have amazing games that are fun to watch. And anytime she has is on a fast break, you can feel at Colonial Life Arena, you can feel it in Greenville. The whole crowd is just like shivering with anticipation, basically, at what's she gonna do? How crazy is this gonna be? And so, it'll be fun to watch her moving forward as she gets a little bit more comfortable playing a full, a full game and playing every few nights or whatever, and delivering that kind of product all the time.
This team is gonna enter the tournament, the number one overall seed, heavy favorites to win it all. They're already, undefeated so far. But if this team is going to lose, how do you see that happening?
Oh, man. Probably just like that Tennessee game. I was surprised at how well they came out defensively. Because I kind of figured, they'd had a tough game against Texas A&M the day before, a lot of turnovers. And that's been a problem for this team occasionally, where they have not so great games holding on to the ball. And so I thought when we were watching that, they came out strong. They're ticked off after what happened yesterday. So they're not this game, get away from them. They just got to get a good performance in down and under their belt. And then they're going to kind of just go through the rest of this and everything will be fine. But then, their defense kind of falls apart. And they're leaving people open on the perimeter and letting Rekia Jackson kind of just cut to the basket. And so I think if something were to happen, if they were to lose, it would be from something like that. It would be the defense is just kind of falling apart and they're not necessarily shooting super well. They've had games where they shoot lights out, and then they've had games where they open the first quarter shooting 28%. And so it's you can't have a day where both of those things are happening at the same time. And this team is so confusing kind of for me, and also for Coach Dawn Staley, because she's talked about it a lot, where it's just they always find a way to win games. So even though they have this perfect record, it hasn't always looked perfect. And so the way that they've just somehow been able to make it happen so many times is wild. And so one kind of wonders as well, how many magic moments like that, how many first career ever 3-point buzzer beaters are you going to have in March Madness? How many, big shots from Bree Hall are you going to have? How many 24-point performances are you going to have from Malaysia Fulwiley? It's just kind of I don't understand really in myself how they've been able to make it happen. And so, we'll see. I mean, because everybody locally, I guess, too, has just kind of been there have been a few games where we're going into them, getting ready to cover them, and we're I think today's the day. I think this might be the one that they drop, and they don't. And so it's just kind of I don't really know what to expect, because I could see them going through. I could see that Tennessee game, because I talked to some of the players in the locker room afterward, and they were like, I know we didn't lose that game, but we thought for a while that we had lost that game, and we don't ever want to feel like that again. And so that kind of, I guess, goes in line with the fan theory, or maybe more than fan theory, that this team should lose a game so that we don't get to the Final Four undefeated again this year. And then, they've never been in a position where they've lost and they don't necessarily know how to handle it, kind of take the pressure off. But it sounds like that brush with a loss was maybe enough to kind of motivate them, but we'll see how it turns out. I don't know.
Ever been to Albany?
I have not. I've never been to Albany. I've never been to Cleveland. I'm traveling. This beat has been so much fun. I've gotten to go so many places I've never been.
Well, I assume you'll get to Albany, but thank you very much for the time. Best of luck the rest of the way. You can follow her at PETitus25. Peyton, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
Before we get back to talking hoops, don't miss your chance to be part of Women's Basketball History. On April 27th, the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame will be hosting its 25th anniversary induction, honoring Simone Augustus, Rita Gail Easterling, Taj McWilliams-Franklin, Maya Moore Irons, Sue Phillips, Violet Palmer, and Rooney Scovel for their achievements in women's basketball. The ceremony will take place at the Tennessee Theater Saturday, April 27th. Sponsorship packages and individual tickets still available. For more information, visit WBHOF.com. That's WBHOF.com or call 865-633-9000. Good stuff from Peyton Titus of the State Newspaper in South Carolina. Megan, your thoughts. You didn't go to the Big East on Saturday, right? You waited till Sunday. Right. So what were you doing when Carmelo Cardoso banked in a three?
I was at my parents' house being antisocial and watching basketball in the living room instead of hanging out with everyone else and screaming at the TV when she made that three in.
A lot of criticism being geared towards Tennessee, Kelly Harper in particular, about how she handled the last 5 seconds. I have thoughts. I have reasons to not be upset with her, but blame Tennessee, but it's not for Cardoso making a three. So what are your thoughts on how Tennessee handled those last 5 seconds?
Yeah, I agree. Like, Cardoso making a three, not guarding her on the perimeter is not where I have the issue with the last 5 seconds. I think it's the fact that, quite frankly, it didn't really look like they were guarding anyone all that intensely. And also, you didn't put anyone on the inbounder. And I thought that was a crazy way to handle the last 5 seconds. So yeah, I mean, I felt like, I know you don't want to give South Carolina a timeout, but also if you can't get your defense organized enough, then you have the timeouts, use them.
Yeah. Raven Johnson inbounded the ball 5 feet from me. So obviously I had front row view. I'm not sure what Rukia Jackson was doing. Like, she wasn't guarding the inbounder, but she wasn't guarding the perimeter. She was just kind of standing there. And Kelly Harper said, like, and I totally get it, don't drag Tamari Key out of the lane, because then you're just setting yourself up for basically a lob from midcourt, catch, layup, overtime. So that part I get. And I mean, if Carmelo Cardoso is going to bank in a three, hat tip to you, young lady. So my issue is yes, the not guarding the inbounder. And then, frankly, Mileja Fulwiley grabbed the missed free throw rebound with 3 seconds left. She was fouled at midcourt with one. And they had fouls to give. If you don't foul her, she's so fast. But in that instance, she's taking either a running 40-foot heave, or she's like jump-stopping from mid-court and having to stop on a dime. Again, if that's how you lose, because she somehow makes it, great. Mm-hmm. Like, tip your cap and move on. So I actually disagree, which I haven't heard many people talk about. I don't think they should have fouled to begin with. Because then, like you said, it gives South Carolina a chance to set up, and a little unorthodox, but, you know, even from someone who's 0 of 1 lifetime from 3, the option to catch, breathe, and shoot from an inch behind the line is, from a non-3-point shooter, is, you know, a lot higher risk than Mileja Fulwiley taking a running 40-footer.
Yeah, very true.
Your thoughts on Sunday's game? Again, I have thoughts on the fight that, you know, cooler heads have seemed to prevail. Hopefully we can all, you know, kind of move on from it. But our first chance to talk about it since, your thoughts on Sunday.
Yeah, so I was watching that game in, like, Gino's press conference when that fight broke out. Like, I don't really know what Gino said in the press conference, because I was, like, I obviously had it on mute. I'm, like, scrolling on Twitter trying to figure out what people are saying and what's going on. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it kind of marred the championship game. The officiating, I think, did let things get out of control. It was a physical game. There was some stuff that wasn't called that probably should have been called. And I think kind of that was the impact of boiling over emotion from the whole game itself.
Again, Raven Johnson inbounded the ball from the TV side, the near side right in front of me. The fight was on the opposite side. If it was the exact same spot on the floor, midcourt, but on the other side, like, Flaje Johnson's brother would have been jumping over me. So I'm glad it happened all the way over there. No punches were thrown. I know, like, fans shouldn't come on the court. That part was bad.
Yeah.
Beyond that, like, Texas Tech in the men's game, like, 3 weeks ago, dude decked a guy. Way worse than what Cardoso did. And it wasn't a talking point for the next 72 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, shouldn't happen. Yeah, it made the last, made 20 minutes of solo radio. Very fun of me. After like the first 3 minutes of reviews, it's like, all right, well, I told you what happened.
What do I say?
now we're just chilling. Now we're just waiting. You know, I had someone there who I didn't realize that fans came on the court. We got through it. But it's fine. Skirmishes happen. They're two physical teams. Doesn't need to be an indictment on, you know, the LSU program or the South Carolina program. Right. It's fine. Happens.
Yeah.
It was, I will say, when they first announced and they said everyone's been ejected, my first thought was like, so is the game over? Then they kind of clarified, benches are ejected. Oh, okay. Well, that's still awkward, but okay.
We can finish the game at least.
Yes. And admittedly, I mean, yeah, it took the air out. Like, there's 2 minutes left. South Carolina was up 7 or 8. Like, it wasn't over, but like, LSU wasn't going to come back. And then the celebration was weird because there's 6 players celebrating. And, you know, it's just, it was awkward. It was weird. We all, you know, at the end of the day, South Carolina won for the 8th time in 10 years. As expected, albeit they looked vulnerable for 3 straight days. Like, again, Texas A&M, they were never really in doubt, but it was a single-digit game going into the 4th. Mm-hmm. Tennessee game was collapse adjacent, mm-hmm. even though they won. And then, yeah, LSU. What takeaways on LSU, if you had any, from that week? Because I think I'm in between. I'm not as high on them as I was maybe last week, and I'm not as low on them as I was about a month ago.
Yeah, I feel like I am higher on LSU, and it's not like necessarily from this weekend. It's just kind of the last month, and that they've been playing a lot better. I thought, you know, when especially like they lost that game to Auburn towards the beginning of SEC play, it was just kind of like a disappointing start to conference play. But they've kind of really rolled past teams pretty much since then. So I think that's a good sign. And like they still have just so much talent that like you're kind of like, yeah, I mean, this team could go really far in March. I wouldn't be shocked to see them go to the Final Four. Like the numbers, they're definitely not favorites to repeat. Do I think they're going to repeat? No. Would I be totally shocked if they do repeat? Also, no.
The last year Poa injury, which was scary in real time when it happened. Hope she's okay. I try to just look up the latest. There wasn't really a whole lot. I'm going to assume she doesn't play next week. I mean, that was a scary concussion. Mm-hmm. If she doesn't come back at all, this is already a team that's so thin. Like, Mikayla Williams wasn't supposed to play at all this weekend. She had to play on Sunday. She was a body that mm-hmm. was healthy enough to play a college basketball game. Janae Kent, who plays like 8 minutes a game, she had to start on Sunday. If she doesn't come back, you know, her minutes, they move Haley Van Lith off the ball where she's more comfortable. So now you're moving her back onto the ball, which just, it looked awkward for the majority of the season. So that's, you know, I hope Poe is okay first and foremost, because, you know, her parents flew in from Australia or New Zealand, Australia, that far away.
Yes. Very far,
far away. So, you know, first and foremost, hope she's fine. Cause again, like we were there courtside. It was pretty scary to watch, you know, just the whole scene unfold. So that's the SEC. ACC, where we got a lot of predictions wrong last week. Very wrong. Ohio State made that abundantly clear early. It'd be a bad week for us. Notre Dame, however, did ultimately win the ACC, like we projected in. Well, not the most aesthetically pleasing game I've ever watched against NC State.
Yeah, but they still won it, so I think that's what matters. But yeah, they, I mean, granted Virginia Tech didn't have Elizabeth Kittley, but they just pummeled Virginia Tech in the semifinals, and then the NC State game was close, but they did come out on top and win the ACC. Well,
26-6, ACC tournament champions, no real bad losses. I know no Elizabeth Kittley, but wins over Virginia Tech, NC State. Where do you put the Irish in that? I assume now they're in the top 16.
They are, and they're on the 3 line. I think, I mean, like you can move up a lot from a conference championship. You're probably not going to jump up 3 seed lines, which is what it would take for them to be a 2. So I think, you know, a 3 seed makes sense here. They climb comfortably into, they should be hosting the first 2 rounds from kind of outside that group just 2 weeks ago. So they'll host, they'll probably be on the 3 line.
Maddie Westbelt, 16 points, made 3 threes. She does that. I don't want to play Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, you know what you're getting from Hannah Hidalgo. If West Bell can stretch the D by making just a couple, like it changes the whole game for Notre Dame, especially in you know, on a day where they're sub 40% shooting, they're playing a pretty good team. Just get that secondary piece in. Yeah. I'm very high on Notre Dame. I know you were low on them like 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. Has that pretty much flipped from what you've seen since?
Yeah, and I think, like you said, West Bell's been a big piece of that. Like, her ability to kind of step out, take the threes, be a secondary scoring option has taken them a step forward. I think before they were just, I mean, they're still very reliant on Hidalgo, but that was it, and it's kind of changed from that.
We don't know Elizabeth Kitley's status. She didn't play last weekend. We're not going to hear her status until she steps on the floor. Without her, they're toast, right? They're done.
Yeah.
No shot.
Absolute toast. Yeah. They're not going to say anything because they want to host, but yeah, they're toast without Kelly. That might make it, they'll make it through the first game. Maybe
the second.
Yeah.
Like, they beat a Miami team without her, and, you know, mm-hmm. Georgia Amore had a big game.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, when you're so reliant on two players, you know, she's going to be, I think she should be a first team All-American, and mm-hmm. you lose that. And Amore's another All-American caliber player. That's not enough.
Right. Yeah. Just one isn't enough.
Any other takeaways from the ACC? I don't have a whole lot. You know, the team we expected to win won, Virginia Tech. We learned what they look like without her. It can get ugly. And NC State.
I guess NC State making it to the final, I thought, was a good sign, because I felt like they've been struggling a little bit lately. So they get to, you know, you lose to Notre Dame, but you lose a close game to Notre Dame and you make it to the final. I thought that was a good sign for the Wolfpack.
Last major conference we have to talk about, Big 12. Texas takes care of Iowa State, relative ease in the title game. Madison Booker. I know she's not Juju or Hannah Hidalgo. Like, she put on a masterclass in mm-hmm. Kansas City. I know for whatever reason they couldn't beat Oklahoma twice, but otherwise, you know, they've really hardly had to take it out of second gear. I know the Big 12 isn't the best conference in the world, but, you know, largely outside of the two Sooner games, they've cruised.
And yeah.
They're a two seed?
Yeah, two seed. I know people kind of were asking, could they be a one? I don't see it. The only team in, like, the last top 16 that they have beaten is UConn. It's just they don't have those. Like, it's hard to justify putting them on the one line over a team like USC, for example, that has, I think, like, 8 top 25 net wins.
Sure. K-State lost in the semifinals. Good game against Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Are they a beneficiary? Were they in the last top 16?
They were not. Oklahoma
They
was.
Fell out.
Yeah, they fell
however,
out. In the last.
However, obviously, Gonzaga can't lose to Portland.
Yeah.
And then Oklahoma lost. So K-State, despite not making it to the title game, they get bumped back up, you think?
Yeah, I think they sneak it back in there to host as a beneficiary of that Gonzaga loss, and then the Oklahoma loss as well, that maybe Oklahoma, if they don't embarrass themselves against Iowa State, kind of sneaks into that spot instead. But being they lost by 17 and it was really never close against Iowa State, I think Kansas State gets that spot.
So if you're looking at the last top 16, so it's going to be, what, 14 of the same? Gonzaga, Oklahoma out, Notre Dame, K-State in.
Yeah, exactly.
Easy enough. So let's transition now. That's the top 16. I don't care about the top 16. Those teams will all make the tournament regardless. Let me pull up herhoopstats.com, NCAA bracketology. Let's see what the latest update was.
8:59
in the morning.
This Whoa. Morning.
Wow. Okay, so we're fresh. Fresh after Texas A&M Corpus Christi's big win last night to punch its ticket. And, oh, you have them. You have them playing South Carolina. That's a tough scene. Okay, so I have it pulled up. Give me your final four teams as receiving a bye. So they won't have to play in the first four. And what's that, the 11 line? The 12 line, maybe?
I think it's a combination of the 10 and the 11.
Give me the last four teams who don't have to play seven games to win it all.
Yeah, so you've got Miami, Middle Tennessee, which could be an auto qualifier. They're still playing in their – or not – yeah, they could be an auto qualifier. They're still – playing in their conference tournament, but they are probably an at-large should they lose in their conference tournament at some point this weekend. Kansas and I wrote Miami to Auburn.
Auburn won a couple games in Greenville, one game at least in Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
So they are firmly in the field.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Who are the teams that will have to play in that first four?
It's Marquette, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and Arizona.
Mississippi State, don't want to say no-showed, lost fairly comfortably to Texas A&M. Vanderbilt had a bad game against Florida, a game they really couldn't lose, and they lost it. And then Arizona's interesting. Fell behind early to USC, came back, had them on the ropes for, what, the second time in 10 days
yeah.
or so? What's their record? 16 and 13 now? 17 and 13?
17 and 15, I think. It's low, definitely, on the wins for making the tournament. I have a hard time seeing the Pac-12 only getting six teams in. I feel like just the strength of the league, they're probably going to put a seventh team in. Arizona feels like the best candidate for that. I think they, even though they didn't get the wins, they've proven that they can compete with the top of the top. So I think that they hopefully did enough to get themselves in.
So Mississippi State, Marquette, Vanderbilt, Arizona, you have as the first four. Who is the team that will be left out with Portland beating Gonzaga?
That was, I think, Penn State. Yeah, it was Penn State. Sorry, I'm looking at my whiteboard. I'm like, who moved? But yeah, Penn State was in that last four-in group going into the WCCC final, and then they get popped out with the Portland win.
Had a bad – they were, I think, 19-5 early February, late January. Picked a bad time to go on a six-game losing streak. Lost to Wisconsin, lost to Illinois. Probably one, if not both of those wins, makes them probably safely in,
mm-hmm.
right? If they just pick up two of those wins. Like, you can forgive two losses to Iowa, loss to Ohio State,
right.
loss at Maryland. Can't say the opportunity wasn't there for the Nittany Lions, so you think they will be the first team out. Who are the other next three teams that you have out?
Yeah, Texas A&M, Washington State, and Columbia. Columbia obviously is still playing, so got a chance to. I think they have to win the Ivy League tournament to make the field, but they certainly could do that. I think that.
Okay, so if Columbia wins, who of Mississippi State, Marquette, Vanderbilt, Arizona, who is the team of those four? You know, we're getting really into the mm-hmm. weeds now. Who is team 68, basically?
I have it as Arizona right now. I think I'm on the fence over whether I would bump out Arizona or one of the SEC teams. I still feel like they're going to put seven from the Pac-12 in.
So we still have, let me pull up the Ivy League schedule. We got the semis today, March 8th. No, today's March 15th. We're way off. Yeah.
The semis today. 4:30 is Penn versus Princeton, and then 7:30 is Harvard versus Columbia.
They are ranked, so I will ask. The MAC, the Metro Championship semifinal is today. Fairfield is 29-1. They are ranked in the AP Top 25, which does not matter to the selection
yes.
committee if you did not know that. If the Stags are either 30-2 or 29-2, are they out?
Yeah, unfortunately. They're not. It's too low for that to happen. They're 82nd in the net. You don't make the field as an at-large at 82nd in the net.
Stags have Canisius today. I'm not going to pretend like I know anything about Canisius. Handle them comfortably. And then I don't know who the other MAC semifinal is. Too much effort to look. Siena or Niagara. So looks like it's the 2 and 3 seeds. So work to do for the Stags. Because Megan says if you lose today or tomorrow, sadly, you'll be off to the WBIT, WNIT, pick a postseason tournament.
Yeah.
Megan, this time next week, we will have a bracket.
Exciting.
What do you consider a success for your bracketology predictions? Like if you're 67-68, if you're like 64-68, like what do you consider a success?
I haven't really thought about that yet. It's my
first year you've like
doing
blown,
the full
blown
field.
It all the way out.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying not to like be too hard on myself if I don't get it perfect. But I mean, obviously like would like to be as close as possible. We shall see.
All right. Well, Megan, we will have to discuss when we will record because Fridays, probably a little late because games start on Friday. So we will have a show sometime next week. We'll figure that out probably once I hit stop recording. And for now, enjoy the couple of mid-majors left. Enjoy the final couple of days without hoops. Get some rest because next week we got a tournament.